Hello. 12 years ago, my mother, my sister, and I marched on Washington, and we watched history. And we saw the first black president be inaugurated. Four years ago, I cried when I saw the fear creep back into my mother's eyes. And I wrote a song for her. And I wrote a song for my sister, my civil rights hero. And I wrote a song for you. And I need your help to sing it. So there's a part that goes, how many children, how many sons, how many daughters, count every one. We'll do it three times. How many children, how many sons, how many daughters, count every one. How many children, how many sons, how many daughters, count every one. One more time. How many children, how many sons, how many daughters, count every one. I know life ain't easy. Sometimes it's damn hard. These streets ain't so breezy. Through it we've made it this far. I feel the need to cry out. My heart is filled with much doubt. Who knows? And again I'll rise. And again I'll rise. Still again I'll rise. And again I'll rise. Because a new dawn waits for no one. I feel you not believing that this hatred still abides. It smolders, never leaving, until it rises like the tide. I felt the pain and the fear. Our cries fall in on deaf ears. Who knows? And again I'll rise. And again I'll rise. Still again I'll rise. And again I'll rise. Because the new dawn waits for no one. Sing it with me. How many children, how many sons, how many daughters, count everyone. How many children, how many sons, how many daughters, keep going. How many tears must fall? How many babies, count them all? How many, how many? I see you. Black skies, storms are coming. What's been churning out of sight? Our hearts and bodies humming. We won't stand idle for this fight. I feel the strength of my pride. I know truth is on my side. I know that again we will rise. And again we'll rise. And again we'll rise. And again we'll rise. Because a new dawn.
I also want to talk to you about something that Lisa Bates, one of the speakers from yesterday, talked to me about. One of our chants is no justice, no peace. And at the moment, we do not have justice, which means we do not have what?
Peace.
Okay, so if you guys were paying attention to the graphic we sent out today, we decided to forego the term peaceful protests and switch to nonviolent resistance. That's because we do not have justice, so we do not have peace. So we cannot be peaceful in the streets. We can be nonviolent, but we cannot be peaceful. Hopefully in my lifetime, I'll get to rest. Hopefully in my lifetime, I will have peace, but not right now. So instead of peaceful protests, we're gonna switch it up. Sorry, I heard a phone somewhere. So instead of that, we're gonna switch it up. It is now gonna be nonviolent resistance. So I'm gonna say nonviolent, and you're gonna say?
Resistance.
Nonviolent.
Resistance.
Nonviolent. Nonviolent.
Resistance.
Nonviolent.
Resistance.
I can't hear y'all. Nonviolent.
Resistance.
Nonviolent.
Resistance.
Because if we don't have justice.
Peace.
Exactly. All right, our next speaker, Mr. Greg McKelvey, is a black campaign manager. You don't see many of those rolling around. He is currently managing Sarah Ayanna Rohn's campaign. She's running for mayor. She will be up for vote on November 3rd. Again, educate yourself about who's running in your local elections. They impact your life much more than national politics do. Do not get distracted. Give it up for Mr. Greg.
Can y'all hear me? Mic check. All right, I want to read y'all some names. Am I at the right mic? Yeah. I want to read y'all some names, okay? Some of y'all are going to know these names and some of y'all aren't. Quanis Hayes, Terrell Johnson, Kendra James, Keaton Otis, Aaron Campbell, Andre Gladden, Patrick Kimmins, and too many more. These are people that were killed by Portland police. Portland police. It's way easier for people to condemn things that happen in Minneapolis, but none of our elected officials are currently saying anything about the death of Quanis Hayes. They want to talk about cops in Minneapolis. They don't want to mention Quanis Hayes. I want to talk about how capable this crowd is. In just a few days, y'all removed police from Portland public schools. You know how long people been working for that? Damn, I told myself I wasn't gonna cry, but now I got kids. Y'all did that. And we are capable of so much more. Y'all did that in a week. Imagine what we could do in a month. Imagine what we can do in a year. Now, this is Portland. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. This is Portland and this is where the power is. And I imagine a Portland where we have a Green New Deal, where we have housing for all, where we have a government that is not bought and paid for by wealthy individuals and corporations. We just need leadership that believes in us. Because a mayor's place is with the people. We need leadership that works with community, not stands in the way and then takes credit when progress becomes inevitable. I don't know if y'all saw today, but the mayor said that he took police out of schools. No, y'all took police out of schools. And I don't want to hear any more about Portland is a white city. Because if Portland was a white city, then the black individual sitting up here wouldn't have been able to get that done, right? Portland might be have more white people than black people. Portland might be less diverse than other cities. But don't erase us, because Portland isn't a white city, because we're still here, and we're still powerful. Now my friend DeRay does an exercise that I want to do with y'all real quick. Some of y'all have probably did it, but we're going to do it anyway. So I want y'all to imagine, close your eyes if you can and if you're able, close your eyes. Imagine the safest place you could be, okay? Who's there? What do you have? Who are you with? What are you holding? What does the room look like? Imagine that. Now, I want everybody who imagined being surrounded by riot police to raise their hands. Thank you. So what that means is that police do not equal safety. So why are we calling the police budget the public safety budget, right? Police do not equal safety. Now, a lot of y'all probably know, some of y'all don't, over half of our budget of the entire city, this beautiful city, goes to that violent policing. Now, that's not public safety. A pandemic came and we weren't safe. Police pulled me over, I'm not safe. Walking down the street, I'm not safe. Sitting in my damn house, I'm not safe. So how is 52% going to Portland police? Public safety. We need to build community safety hubs in every neighborhood with that money, not going to militarized police. Where people can gather, shower, eat, be in community, because I am 100% sure that that looks a hell of a lot more like safety when you close your eyes than being surrounded by riot police. Am I right? Now I'm gonna tell you a quick story about my experience in City Hall. Back when I was young and skinny, I used to lead protests too before I had kids. That's what made me not skinny. My wife is skinny, though, so I don't know how that works. So I was invited into City Hall, right, to have conversations about laws that are still on the books that are only policed for black people, right? Things like, did y'all know spitting in public is illegal? Well, it's only illegal if you're black, it turns out. It turns out that the Portland Tribune did a series. It turns out that black people are policed for these minor crimes way more than anybody else. Things like jaywalking, right? I jaywalk, I might go to jail, I might die. You jaywalk, you just get across the street. So we were in meetings with City Hall at Ted Wheeler's office trying to get this taken care of, right? Get these laws off the books. We did one meeting. The meetings continued. I was kicked out. Couldn't be in the meetings anymore. He said I couldn't be there because I opposed the mayor. Those laws still on the book. Those laws still on the books. Spitting in public. You'll still get arrested walking across the street. You might get killed walking across the street. Kick the only black person out of those meetings. Now, after that, he invited Joey Gibson, Patriot Prayer, the Proud Boys into City Hall for a cup of tea. But I'm kicked out, right? We shouldn't have to be demanding the things that we're demanding, right? We're standing on the shoulders of giants that have already done this work. I don't want to hear nothing about the concessions being we're going to have more town halls. The concessions are we're going to have more conversations. We're going to study tear gas more. I don't need to study tear gas more. I've been gassed enough times. I'll tell you, it is not nice. And it is inhumane to be gassing crowds in the middle of a damn pandemic that attacks the respiratory system. It's common sense. It's common sense. When the mayor came back to town after the first night of protests, you would think maybe he'd meet with the protest leaders, right? He'll meet with activists. He'll meet with our elders. He'll meet with the faith community. No. Mayor spent the first day back. When he came back, he spent it with the Portland Business Alliance, one of his biggest donors. And they plotted their vengeance against us. That's how he spent his first day. It's not right because a mayor's place is with the people, not the Portland Business Alliance. And you know, when they huddled together, what they did? They got a state of emergency in one day. But youth climate activists have been calling for a climate state of emergency for years. He said he couldn't do it. And in one day, because Louis Vuitton's windows got broken, we had a state of emergency. We are sick of being told that there'll be more conversations, more town halls, more studies. Because we need change now and we can't wait. We can't even, I could come up here, I got my Sarah shirt on, right? I got the Sarah gear. I could come up here and tell y'all, oh, we need to vote in November. If shit doesn't change before November, it's way too late. I might be dead, right? Sarah's calling for a ban on the chemical weapons that we've seen deployed in our streets. Not temporarily, always. She's calling for required de-escalation from the police, not suggested de-escalation. Right now, they could shoot at a moving car. Anyway, man, sorry, I'm gonna get emotional. Her stuff is set up over here. Today, she spent the day feeding the houseless and went straight to protest. She's been in the crowd with y'all. I could attest. Where Nakenga at? I could attest she's been called up to the mic. Sarah said, no, I ain't coming to the mic because this is not my moment. But a mayor's place is with the people. Who else hires a Black Lives Matter activist to run their campaign and then actually forces the runoff? But I'd be lying if I said voting was enough. We can't let this moment pass because the power is with us. Whose streets? Whose streets?
Our streets.
Whose streets?
Our streets.
Thank you, everybody.
Erin Campbell's mom is in the audience. I don't know if you all remember Erin Campbell, but Erin was shot and killed by Portland officers in 2010. And he still has a job now. Erin's mom is here today, and she wants to share her story. She lost both of her sons on the same day, one from being hospitalized, and Erin was in a situation where he was very upset about that. And the day resulted in her losing both of her children. So I want to call up Marva Campbell to share her story today.
Hello, everyone. This is a wonderful thing to see. I'm so happy that everyone is coming together to make demands so there will be changes in not just the community, but in this world. So many people are hurting, especially our Black community. And this takes me back to January 2010, where my 23-year-old son, Timothy Douglas, was fighting for his life. He had a heart transplant, and he lost that battle. But Erin, his brother, was in the hospital for 2 weeks straight. And I said, Erin, you need to go home and get some rest. You cannot take care of your brother if you don't take care of yourself. He said, okay, Mom, I'm going to go home, and then I'm going to come back in 2 days. The next day, Tim died. And Erin was so distraught. He was not mentally ill. He was distraught. So the police was called to his girlfriend's house to do a welfare check on her because she would not answer the phone. So when the police got there, she came out, they took her phone, they texted him back and forth and asked him, are you trying to hurt yourself? He said, no. Well, will you come out and talk to us? I'll make the story a little short. And it's all public record. He came out, but before he came out, he said, if I come out, you're going to shoot me. He said, they said, we're not going to hurt you. So guess what he did? He went out. They told him to turn around. He turned around. He put his hands on his head, interlocked his fingers. And someone, one of the officers said, put your hands up. Well, this wasn't enough. And they began to shoot him with rubber bullets. He began to run. And the officer, Freshire, took an AR-15 rifle that's used in war and shot him in his back and killed him. And you know what? He said he didn't hear a command. I don't know if it's true or not, but what was he doing? He was passive. And I'm here today, I want them to change the laws about the color of law, and the police have a way of getting out. Oh, I was afraid. There's a letter out there that I wrote to his family saying that he didn't just hurt me. He hurted his family. He hurted the whole community. And today we're here with the same thing. We were able to see George lose his life for nothing. I just want us to change the laws. There should be consequences for the things they do. There shouldn't be a way out. If there's consequences, they'll think about what they're doing. The officer was fired, but he wasn't the initial officer that started the movement. They began to shoot him. They should have fired all of the ones that were involved. They fired Freshire. Guess what? The mayor called me and said, heads up. Let you know we're hiring him back because we're being sued. So now he's back on the force. From what I'm told, it's a desk job. I don't know, but that wasn't the only incident. So we need to come together. We need to vote. We need to have this money directed the right way, get in the pockets of these police officers' pension, and maybe we should just start over with the police force. Maybe we should do lie detector tests, some type of research of their background, and see if they even qualify to be an officer. So I want to see some changes of how we hire police officers, whether white or black. Get rid of the bad, keep the good that love us. And one other thing I want to say is that in all of this, I've learned to forgive. Anybody who has any contact with the police and they have hurt you, we have to learn. That doesn't mean to be passive and let them roll over us and beat us and everything. I'm not saying being passive, but I am saying we have to let the envy and the hurt and the pain go away so we can move forward and be better people and better citizens and love each other and be there for whatever color, black, white, red. Let's love each other, stick together, and make a difference in this community. I love you and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell, for giving us that story. I know that's not always the easiest thing to do. I'd also like to acknowledge that Mr. Ford, the founder of Portland's Black Panthers, is here. I want you guys to give him a round of applause, please. I know y'all can do better than that. Come on. As a matter of fact, while we're at it, Let's all stand together, and in solidarity and in memory of Aaron Campbell, let's hold silence. Hands up. Hands up! 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 Thank you, guys.
I'm an Oregon girl. I grew up in Salem and North and Northeast Portland. And when I was a kid, we used to move a lot. Like every 2 years, move, move, move. And I thought that was normal. I didn't realize people lived in the same house their whole lives sometimes. When I was a little girl, my father was a CO. Y'all know what that is? He was a corrections officer, right? He was one of the very first black corrections officers, non-white corrections officers in Oregon at the state penitentiary and at the state hospital. When I was a kid, I used to visit the prison pretty often. When I headed off to college, and I'm gonna fast forward a little bit, right about that time, my father went back to college himself and got a master's degree in social work because he didn't want to be a CO anymore. He was a PO for a while, but he didn't want to do that either because he realized that if he had met some of those brothers 10 years earlier, 15 years earlier, if they'd had a mental health therapist, a counselor, a brother, someone to lean on, to talk to, they never would have been in prison in the first place. And then he went on and got his PhD and became a mental health therapist because my daddy said, now I see all these little black boys, and for him, mostly foster children and black and brown boys, and there weren't men who did that kind of work in this state. And so therapists are important. We just talked about mental health. It's so important, but it's also so deeply important to have someone who understands you, where you've been through, where you're coming from, where you're going, someone who looks like you, but that you don't have to explain what it's like to grow up in your skin. And so that's the next role he took on, was working with foster boys, most who would never return home to their families for whatever reasons, to help them grow into men. And my father gave me this example, right? Where you start doesn't have to be where you finish, and you can learn along the way. Now, I'm really lucky to have had that experience. Right now, you heard Darren tell you that I'm the president of the Urban League of Portland. Thank you. Thanks for that, but that's not why I'm here. I'm the president of the Urban League of Portland because I used to be you. When I was 10 years old, I had my first job in politics. You heard him say that I worked for Obama and I loved that job. But when I was 10, I had a little internship in the state capitol. I worked for the first black woman in our state legislature, right? The Honorable Margaret Carter. She is still a mentor to this day, and she is a boss. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about my story because I want you to know a few things, and I've got an apology to offer to all of you. But when I was 10, I learned from her. And back then, we were protesting apartheid in South Africa, and we were working to get the state of Oregon to divest from South Africa, because our money shouldn't be going to keep people enslaved in their own country. So we fought and we worked, and we were 10 and 11 and 15 and 6. We worked and we got that done. And I was a part of this movement and the next movement. You know MLK Boulevard, it used to be called something else. When I was a kid, we were out there. It was Union Street, say it. It was Union Street, right? Running right through the heart of Black Portland. We were out there getting petitions signed and talking to business owners, and business owners were saying, well, I have to change my stationery if we change the name, and I gotta change my business cards if we change the name. But we said, it's the right thing to do, let's do it. So we worked and we worked and we said yes. And it was little black girls, and it was my indigenous sisters, and it was little Asian girls. It was like, we were out there doing that work. You don't have to clap for that, because that ain't shit now. It meant something then, and that's why I want to share this with you, right? It's still in my gut, and it mattered to me then, and I'm glad I went through that experience because I learned a lot. I learned about the naysayers, because those business owners are still business owners. They're still the ones who want City Hall to come down hard on you. They're still the ones who want the streets swept of people who are houseless. They're still around. We just changed the name of the street, and it's not enough. When I was a little older, I was in high school. You've read Malcolm X's biography, right? Some of y'all? Well, Spike Lee made a movie, and now I'm sure it's streaming everywhere because all the streaming services are showing all the black movies right now, hoping black people stay home and just watch movies. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. But back then, when I was in high school, the movie theater over at Lloyd Center didn't want to show it. And the movie theater down on Broadway that's now closed didn't want to show it because they didn't want us to show up. They were so afraid that if we learned a little something about ourselves, about the truth about black people, that we'd be tearing shit up and burning shit down. And they didn't want to show the movie and take our money. A movie, y'all. A dramatization. So we mobilized and we marched. And the NAACP youth group that I was a part of, we signed petitions and we knocked on doors and we went to the mayor and we started cutting up big time so that we could get it played, so that we could have a little piece, a little something of our own. You'll take our money to buy in your food court. You'll take our money to buy clothes, but we can't watch a movie? That was how my activism grew, right? Bit by bit, little by little. And I was lucky to have a mom and a dad who let me skip school to do what needed to be done. I was lucky to have a mom and dad that said, okay, here's how you keep yourself safe. And I still got my stuff. I'm good. What I want to say to you and to some of your parents who are listening through you is that support was so crucial to me. I never had to wonder whether I could be out in these streets doing what I needed to do, and I hope that you never have to wonder. But even if you do, know that the Urban League is here for you. We're here to support you, we're here to have your back, not here to take your place, not here to step in front of you. That's not my job. I graduated from high school in 1993, so I'm an elder in training. I'm working on it. And I thought, y'all, when I was 14, 15, I really thought that we were going to end racism. I thought that if I worked and worked in all my coalitions and all my groups, I'm just putting it down and putting it down and putting it down, that I could do something else by the time I was 30. I believed that, and I feel like such a fool right now because I thought the old racists would die. And that would be that. The people who killed King and who killed Malcolm, they will be gone. And we are young and we are smart and we know better. And I told you we were black and brown. We were indigenous. We were together. So it wasn't going to be like that anymore. But what I didn't know was that racists are made, they're not born. Racists are made, they're not born. Racists are made, they're not born. I didn't know that then. And so this is my apology. Because I thought that then, and I have learned since then, that it wasn't enough. That's all right, because this is a learning process and we're still at it. And I've got another apology to offer. Not just for my naivete then, because I didn't stop, I didn't quit. We're not done, so I'm not done. When I got older, I went away to college, and I went to the best black college in the country, Florida A&M University. It's a beautiful place that taught me for the first time in my life, right? As a black kid growing up here, I was finally in the majority, right? I'm gonna tell y'all something, and I want y'all who look like me to get some. There is something that lives in my gut every day, whether I'm at City Hall fooling with these people, whether I'm at the Capitol, whether I'm standing in front of a bank, wherever I may be, that I remind myself who and what I am. That I am never alone, no matter where I go, and it helped me to grow that at FAMU. Then I went on to law school, and I'm a lawyer. I went to Howard. It's a black law school. It's where civil rights lawyers are made. And now my best friends are black lawyers. My husband is a civil rights lawyer here in Oregon. This is what we do for a living and for life. I'm just sharing this with you because I want you to see sort of my runway, how I got to where I am now. And hopefully you will believe me when I say, I am here in service of you. I am here tonight because of you. I came because you are beautiful and I needed this. I needed to see you. I needed to feel you. And I have not been out here sooner, and it breaks my heart because my daddy wanted to come with me. And my daddy don't need to be out here no more. He's not well enough for it, but he still worries about me, right? But I told him, Daddy, it's my turn to be out here with the young people. I gotta go, I gotta do it, and I'm so grateful that you had me here. But there's something else I wanna say before I take my seat, and it's this. I am sorry that they tear gassed you. I am sorry that the National Guard hit the streets in our city. I was on the phone all day, y'all, with the governor, with the mayor, with the mayor's donors, trying to get people, the right people, to pull the right levers to make the call for them to take it back, to pull it back before the decision was made, because they could have said, oh my goodness, it's the wrong thing to do, we're not gonna do it. So I wasn't out here with you, I was trying to get them to take it back, because that's my job now. My job is papers and letters and fights and arguments and strategery and budgets and dollars and cents and all the things. You heard Darren say that more than half this city's budget is spent on cops. And it's enough already. It's enough already. But I didn't win that argument. And I watched people who I have considered to be allies, people who are in elected office, people who are in appointed office. Our U.S. attorney, y'all, Billy Williams, he was on the Urban League board when they hired me. We're friendly, I like him, but I watched him talk about how sickened he was by these buildings and that paint and broken glass. Not about black lives. I watched him talk about it and it broke my heart. Because he knows better, y'all, but that's not what he was talking about. So I'm here to tell you that you're not alone. That it's a fight here and there and on many levels, but you are why we can win. You are the reason the governor was on my phone this weekend, not just because of me. She thinks I'm nice enough, but you are the reason that she's asking, what can we do? You are the reason legislators are saying, how much money do we need to spend on black folks right now? On black education, on black health, on black housing? You are the reason, because they don't want you in these streets. They want you to go home. They messed up when they closed school, I tell you that. Whoops. I know you'd still be here, and it's beautiful. I told you I would focus on black women, and I meant to do that. I'm a black woman, so I am focusing on black women, because justice belongs to all of us. So before I take my seat, and I know I said that once, but y'all, Taisha Miller, Alberta Spruill, Katherine Johnston, Tarika Wilson, Elena Stanley Jones, she was 7 years old when the police killed her in her own home. Sharice Francis, Rakia Boyd, Chantel Davis, Corinne Gaines, Pamela Turner, Atiana Jefferson, y'all remember her just last year, killed her in her own home while they stood outside her house, a black woman. And of course, Kendra James, our very own, and Breonna Taylor. Listen. The Urban League is a national organization. I have brothers and sisters who do this work all across the country. My sister, Sadiqua Reynolds, is the CEO of the Urban League in Louisville, and I talk to her every other night to see what's going on in her city. It's heartbreaking. My brother, Stephen, is running the Urban League in the Twin Cities, and he's out in these streets. He's out in these streets for George Floyd, but also for you. They are my strength, but you are too. My final thought is to please be strong and there for each other, because this is not over, but we can, we will win. Thank you.
Say, but I just want to take a second to talk about our earth, and I just want to make sure that everybody picks up their trash and picks up after themselves. And if you notice something on the floor, please pick up after your brethren and sisters. Also, after everybody leaves here and we march, there will be a crew coming through to help clean what everybody else leaves behind. So if anybody wants to stay behind and help, you're welcome to. They'll be coming with supplies. But if you find yourself standing and waiting for them to come here because the traffic is horrendous because of us, you can just pick up stuff and put it in a central location and they will come by and grab it. And that would be a big help. Because this is about all of us. Humanity, the place we live, love, compassion, and all of that.
Hey, you guys. I know that we've been here for a while, and I really appreciate it, but I'm sorry. I cannot allow us to leave and not hear the people that have been patiently waiting to come up here and say stuff to us and speak their piece. So if you still are out there and you've been rocking with us for the last 2-3 days and we've gotten disrupted and you still want to come up here, the floor is yours. Please come up here, okay? If you have to go, thank you so much for being with us tonight. If you still want to come up here and say something to us, please do. The floor is still yours. We're still here, okay? Thank you. I know it sounded like we were wrapping up, but we're not quite yet finished yet, okay? Because we want to make sure that those people get heard, okay? Because this floor is not just for us, it's for everybody's voices to be heard. Thank you. Please come up here now. We'll take a little bit of time. I know you're probably from far away, but come on up, all right?
Hi, my name is Mary Gotch. I'm 18. So just to let you guys kind of know my background, I grew up in Estacada, Oregon. So I'm going to let you guys figure out what that's like growing up as a black woman in Estacada, Oregon. I didn't have a black classmate until the sixth grade. I went there from preschool to sixth grade, growing up with no one who looks like me. And so when I got to high school, I finally had the most amount of black kids, but still, I went to a predominantly white high school. And this year, I was like involved in speech and debate, and I got to focus on poetry that surrounded black women and empowerment of black women, because I didn't grow up with any black role models or any black women, strong black women, until literally I got to my freshman year of high school. That's a long ass time. And so I combined these poetry pieces about the empowerment of black women and what it means to be a black woman growing up in America. And I have transitions throughout my poetry. So when I hold my fist up, it's my transition. It's not my poetry. But here it goes. The black woman should be loved and protected. For she's not just the mother of all, but she's the closest to God. Her skin absorbs the sun as if that's where it has resided since creation. Her hair defies gravity because, as Mother Nature, she determines what can rise. Her bosom has supplied nutrition of life to all of humankind. Her full lips have spoken entire kingdoms into existence, while her smile alone has caused the fall of many great men and their empires. Her body made strong because she has held up the weight of the world while taking the lashes of the man she loves. Her curves degraded and put on display only to be emulated by those who taunt her. Her DNA stolen, duplicated, and injected to be the savior of mankind. Her wisdom goes beyond what any man can comprehend because she has endured the life no other man can withstand. The black woman should be loved and protected, for she's not just the mother of all, but she's the closest to God. For when you look at a black woman, you are looking at the first and greatest of all of God's creation. When you look into her eyes, you are staring into the kingdom. She is the embodiment of everything that is good. She was, is, and always will be home. She is what people speak of when they declare they found heaven on earth. The black woman should be loved and protected, for she's not just the mother of all or the closest to God. But the black woman is God. In this poem called The Black Woman by Daedra Williams, she highlights the beauty and angelic nature that black women hold despite the horrible things they've endured. In my next poem by Heaven Ambachew called Dear Black Woman, it emphasizes the resiliency that black women have embodied in trying to love themselves despite the constant shame they get for simply trying to love the skin they're in. With strength and resiliency, hair that defies gravity, aesthetics of gold radiate from within your rich melanin. Your existence, a delightful phenomenon. Bending without breaking, bleeding without dying, self-love without harm, versatile and dripping honey. You move mountains. From back-ended compliments, constantly living under your tack, loving yourself, a political act. You're pretty for a black girl. Are you mixed with anything? I don't date black girls, too smart for a black girl. As if your blackness is too bold, as if it would be better cooled off and watered down. No, this is black. No sugar, no additives. Now you want a mouthful of my culture, homegrown and organic. Feasting, draining me of that which comes with my faith, my skin, my body. Well, no longer can we sit in the shadows. No longer will we accept what they say. Remember, you are royalty. Dark eyes, thick thighs, no more apologies. You are a whole movement. You are worth the conversation. Take up your space, queen. Be unapologetic. Ayanna Stanley Jones, Tarika, Tanisha Anderson, say their names. Shout them, scream. Let your words echo and shake the foundations of the system. A violent system. A white system. Dismantle this structure. Remember, honor, but do not weep, sisters, for there is still hope. Reclaim your time through your words, your stories. We can no longer be a bridge for those that do not wipe their feet before entering our homes. The term angry black woman is a racial and stereotypical term that spouts from the origins of slavery. It enlightens the idea that black women are aggressive, hostile, and bossy. And my final poem called This Black Woman is Angry by Georgina Ramsey, she plays with the term angry black woman to show that black women do have a real reason to be angry. This black woman is angry. Yes, this black woman is angry as hell. In a world where the color of one's skin, their melanin, is reason enough to kill, you should be angry as well. This black woman is frustrated. Her brothers and sisters are being unjustly incarcerated so they can be falsely painted as thugs, dangerous villains who drink, can't think, do drugs. This black woman is confused because the same people who paint this picture will post a picture wearing our hair, our features, our skin, like costumes, turning a blind eye to what's within. You cannot, you will not discard our hearts. We are not a sum of parts to be disposed of at your refusal. We are not objects for your perusal, not here for your approval. You do not own us. This black woman is tired of people policing our feelings when the police can't even police their feelings. So stop with your ifs, buts, and excuses. Enough is enough. You cannot justify injustice. This black woman has questions. Who made you this violent? Tell me, what did they do? Is someone going around killing your people too?
this black woman is scared because they shout slavery's over as the streets flood with the blood from strange fruit. If slavery's over, tell me, why can I still feel this noose around my neck? Reminding me my life hangs on a thread, that it takes just one racist to shoot me dead. A wise man once said, just because we're magic doesn't mean you can't kill us. So you can't kill us and expect us not to feel angry, tired, frustrated, confused, scared. This black woman is angry. Her brothers and sisters are being beaten until their skin is black and blue. This black woman is angry. The question is, why aren't you? Thank you.
Mary's too humble to let y'all know that at every speech and debate tournament, she got first place.
We're not too humble to give her another round of applause, are we? Your phone. I need your help. I need your help. Having a technical. Go back. Just go back to that. Now, can anybody hear me? I know I'm a little hoarse. Can y'all hear me?
Sorry. I want to let y'all know, yeah, the boy found his family. His dad came for him.
Yay. Hey, that's what we do. We take care of our own, right? So since the young lady a moment ago, I don't know her name, but she was talking about an angry black woman. Well, I think we should transition into what we should do to make a black woman smile. Now, this is called Black Woman Smile, and it is by T.L. Gray L. Do you know how strong you have to be to make a black woman smile? Do you have any idea what an accomplishment that is? She has borne the weight of this country on her back for 400 years. She had suffered the agony of unassisted, husbandless child rearing since the 1600s. Have you any idea how much strength it takes to put a smile on her face? Do you need the strength of, you need the strength of Samson, the nerve of Joshua, the courage of David facing Goliath, because she has cultivated in her womb the marvel of the universe, only to have her hopes and dreams aborted and her aspirations show up dead on arrival. She has given birth to kings and queens and delivered her majestic promise, only to have her children kidnapped and sold to a criminal with no respect to her royalty. If you can make a black woman smile, you are a miracle worker. Imagine breastfeeding your child in Virginia and having snatched from your arms, branded, hijacked to Louisiana, and publicly fondled in New Orleans auction block. And the memory of that pain was locked and bound in your DNA. Would you be smiling? If you breastfed someone else's child, only to watch her grow up old enough only to call you darky, pickaninny, or nappy-headed jigaboo, you wouldn't be smiling either. If you can make a black woman smile, you have done something. If you can make her smile, you are stronger than Atlas, because God knows she has been. She has been raped and ravaged and scorned and nearly annihilated. She has been pimped and pummeled and stoned and deliberately depreciated. She has been cooked and clean and sewn and never been compensated. She has been forced to watch her offspring of her loins mangled and maligned across centuries. Her character has continuously smeared assassination over and over and over again and again and again and again. You ever thought how strong you have to be just to be a black woman? She has to make brick without straw after being whipped, after all of her customs stripped all of her culture stripped from her traditions. No other woman in history of the civilized world has gone through what she has gone through. No other beings on this planet have endured what she has endured. She has been chastised, criticized, demonized, and terrorized. She has had to stand and watch her man bullwhipped for trying to stand. She has had to stand when her man was castrated for trying to stand. She has to carry her man because every time he tried to carry himself, he was murdered for trying to do so. Ask Betty Shabazz about Malcolm. Ask Coretta Scott King about Martin. Ask Emmett Till's mother. If you can make a black woman smile, you have achieved something. Since 1619, when we came here in chains, the entire world has been messing with her brain, disrespecting her, calling her out of her name, and she's been tired, just plain Fannie Lou Hamer tired. Tired of being B words and H words and N words and other words and everything except the child of God that she is. But the one thing in this world that will make a black woman smile, the one thing that will make a black woman smile is her man, a real man. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, she will smile. She will smile regularly and gladly. So man up, my brother. Man up and make your woman smile. Treat her like the queen that she is. She deserves it. And recognize this. In all of God's creation, there is nothing more alluring, more appealing, more attractive, nothing more beautiful, more charismatic, nothing more charming, more captivating, nothing more delightful, more elegant, more exquisite, nothing more fascinating, more gorgeous, more inspiring, or intoxicating. Nothing more magnificent than the lovely, and more lovely than a black woman's smile.
So I know you guys have done a lot of walking, a lot of shouting. You guys are standing right now. I really appreciate you guys being here. I just want to check in with you guys. Are you guys tired?
No.
Are you tired?
No.
Are you tired?
No.
Thank you guys that have been sharing all of your poetry, all of your stories. It's very powerful, very moving, and very honest. And that's all. That's one of the main things we need right now is honesty, truth, accountability. So, in honor of that, we're gonna have a couple more guests come up and speak their truth. Please be respectful. We're almost out of here. I really appreciate you guys.
Quick few remarks. Round of applause for everybody that showed up to this. The amount of noise we are making nationally is beautiful. But a protest like this, to end the type of things that we're trying to end, systemic oppression, the injustice of killing black folks for damn near nothing. Shit like that is not from 6 p.m. to 1 a.m. A protest like that is not just from 6 p.m. to here. And we go back to Rev Hall, go home, go to sleep. Oh, see you tomorrow. A protest like this is a 24-hour, around-the-job type of deal. We need more proactivity, conversation. All these white folk can talk to your parents. Pick their brain. How do you guys feel about this protest? Talk to your brothers and sisters. Not the oh, I'm so sorry for what you guys are going through. That shit's done. What can I do? How can I help? These are the conversations we need to have together. I also wanted to do one time, for all these people up on the stage, for all these people who have donated equipment, time, food, water, vehicles, can we get a warm round of applause for everybody who organized this? Be proactive past this. Have the conversations, that's all I have.
What's up, everybody? Can I get a Black Lives Matter one time?
Black Lives Matter!
Nah, I said, can I get a Black Lives Matter one time?
Black
don't know. I think y'all were louder on the bridge. I said, can I get a Black Lives Matter one time? That's what I like to see. You know black is beautiful, right? I said, you know black is beautiful, right? I said, you know black is beautiful, right? That's right, that's right. Everybody right here, I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. Y'all out here fighting for me. Y'all out here fighting for y'all brethren right now. Just believe the white people, the Mexicans, the Asians, everybody out there, we love y'all. If y'all here right now, we love you. On the real, y'all the real support. We appreciate it. It couldn't be without you. Best believe we'd still be fighting without y'all. But all the support and everything is really, really appreciated. Y'all brethren out here, all right? Y'all unified right now, and that's a beautiful thing. All 50 states, we're unified right now in this protest. It doesn't matter if y'all looting. It doesn't matter what y'all doing. Right now, we're unified. We got a voice. We got a cause. We're actually saying something. Hold up. We're unified, like I was saying. I just wanted to say I really appreciate every single person who's out here. Y'all gonna remember this for the rest of y'all lives. Y'all gonna remember the faces that are right next to you. And outside this protest, if y'all do see somebody who was at this protest, give them a wave, give them a holler, be like, yo, what's up, brother? Because the fact is, they were here for you, all right? They were here for you, nobody else. They're here to help you. Now, I'm gonna give it up to the next speaker. His name's Linton. He's gonna speak to y'all for a second. Again, one more time, put your fist in the air. Let me get it again. Black Lives Matter, right? I said Black Lives Matter, right?
Black Lives Matter.
I said Black Lives Matter, right?
Black Lives Matter.
That's what I like to hear.
To all the beautiful faces out there of all ethnicity and all color, I just want to say thank you for being here. I just want to give you a little bit of enlightenment of where I came from. So I was born in Portland, Oregon. However, I was raised in Eastern Oregon. And if you don't know about Eastern Oregon, I want you to raise your hand if you ever heard of Pendleton, Oregon. Unfortunately, you feel me? I don't. So what's famous in Pendleton, Oregon is the Roundup. And if you don't know what the Roundup is, it's by far one of the biggest rodeos in America, probably the biggest rodeo in Oregon. It's probably the only rodeo in Oregon, I don't know.
It is.
So I want you to understand a little bit of my background of where I came from, where I was raised, of how I was supposed to be educated. As you can see, I'm not the type that was raised in Pendleton. Where to begin? So first grade is when I moved there to Pendleton. And being a kid, so young, so black, but yet in the foster care system with a white mother and a Latino, white father and Latino mother. But being black, I was confused, I was lost. So then as I grow older, I start to learn things that I don't understand. For instance, fourth grade, fifth grade, around that time, I remember being at the carnival during Pendleton Roundup. And I was with my friends, and it was late at night. We were having fun on the Ferris wheel, on the zipper, riding all those rides, carnival food. It was an amazing time to me. Had a blast. So I begged my parents, can I please stay? Please let me stay. And they said, son, I'm going to let you stay. However, promise me that you're going to take the back way and not through the main streets. Because what's in the main street, that's racism. When you run into that, you're going to fear your life. So I said, all right, I got you. I'm going to be solid. So when the carnival got over, I decided to take the back street. and I believe the walk was 3-4 blocks. I'm walking by myself, and it's a cold night, and a white truck lifted full of high school students, remind you, I'm fourth, fifth grade, pulls up with a paddle and beats the shit out of me. Beats the living shit out of me like that. I was so ashamed and I was so scared that I held that in for so long. I didn't tell anybody until I got old. So then, fast forward just a little bit more. I can't tell you everything that I went through. But here I am in high school. And we're having the greatest season that we've ever had in my 4 years. And we weren't really good. It's a 2A school. It's about 200 kids in my high school. And we pull up to this place called John Day. Raise your hand if you know where John Day is. So I'm pretty sure those that raise their hand, they understand what lives there. And that is pure hatred, pure racism. So as we pull up, and the women's team gets off the bus because they're all white, my coach, Brian Pickard, had to stop us. And they said, we'll never understand this. However, what lives in this community, what is deeply rooted within this community, is racism, pure hatred. So with that being said, I ask that you protect Linton and that you protect Caleb. And that I need three people at all times to be around him, to be around these two. I'm black and he's Asian. So we walk up in there. And as soon as I walk up in there, I thought this was a joke. I thought this was TV. I thought this was what we seen on the screens. I walk up in there, and I shit you not, the feeling that I had, I thought I was scared for my life. I was so intimidated, but I had to focus on the game that I love, basketball. So during this game, warm-ups, and excuse my language, but I gotta say what they said, and this being the John Day community, I heard, the first thing I ever heard was, fuck you, nigger. And that came from the crowd. The whole entire game, I heard nigger, I heard spook, jigaboo, porch monkey, go back to Africa, you name it, I heard it. The pain that I felt almost feels like I felt the 401 years of the pain and suffering that the black community feels today. And I still to this day didn't understand. What did I do? So at the end of the game, we ended up winning. And you can imagine my reaction to that crowd that called me all those disrespectful names. This is my gym, that's what I said. This is my gym. So, based off of my reaction though, oh, all the white faces that were pissed. Pissed. I'm sitting in the locker room and my coach pulls me aside and says, you've been signed out. I'm like, what? Signed out? What you mean? We're gonna have to sneak you out the back entrance because they're waiting for you. I thought I was gonna die. Like, this is it. This is how I go out, mama. Like, shit. I'm sorry. So I sneak out the back exit and I ride with an old friend of mine and his father. And that car ride was so silent, but yet I couldn't enjoy the win. Not the win of the game, but the win that I overcame of that community. So that silent ride home, 5 hours later, we make it into Athena. And I got home, and I hugged my dad so hard, and I cried my eyes out. I said, what's wrong, son? Like, you won. Nah, because the world still hates me. So moving forward, thank you. Thank you. So moving forward, I want to go ahead and push this to 2017. Because I thought my community loved me. I really did. But I don't feel like they love me enough. Because all the instances that I didn't explain to you, I'm backpacking my family. I'm backpacking myself. I got the weight of the world on my shoulders, it feels like, because ain't no one got me. Ain't no one praying for me. And so I pull up into my community, and I'm bumping this music. And if you know this song, then you can understand why I was bumping this music. I feel like the chip on my shoulders. I feel like I'm losing my focus. I feel like I'm losing my patience. I feel like my thoughts in the basement. I feel like you miseducated. I feel like I don't want to be bothered. I feel like you may be the problem. I feel like there ain't no tomorrow. Fuck the world. The world is ending. I'm done pretending. And fuck you if you get offended. And I'm blaring this music because it's my pain. And my mom gets a phone call talking about, Darlene, why is your son playing thug music so loud in this community? Still, I did not understand. Why am I not loved, not even from my own community? Too much pain that I felt. And through all this time, I stayed silent. I said nothing. I said absolutely nothing. So then I pushed this forward to 2019. I'm playing basketball at Eastern Oregon University. So then, if y'all been to LeGrand, it's the same shit. Same animal, just a different beast. So the library is name of a slave master, if I'm incorrect. I can't remember. It's been a while. But it was February 8, 2019, playing Warner Pacific, and I got this man to the left of me there. And for the first time in my life, I got my little brother with me. The first time. So I told myself, Lynn, you got to stand in what you believe in. You got to stand for something that you've been fighting all alone by yourself, isolated. So during the playing of the national anthem, I raised my fist, thinking about Colin Kaepernick, what he was willing to sacrifice. I was willing to lose everything. My scholarship, my role in the team, I only averaged 2 minutes. Hey, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm cold. We can go ahead and get that matchup one-on-one, we can. But I stood there and I held my fist up alone. And the backlash that I received and that the athletic program received, well, ended up in the conversation in the locker room between my head coach and my assistant coach. And they asked me why I did it. And I told them because of the inequality that my people suffer from. And because my mom is at home crying because she's afraid that her mom and her dad and her entire family may be deported back to Mexico. That's why I raised my left hand. And he said to me, well, I think it's the smartest thing that if you don't want to stand for the national anthem, that you stay in this locker room. That was the biggest mistake I ever made because I listened to that man. And I stayed in that locker room. And then I also came out and I stood there too during the national anthem. Sticking through my head, what the fuck am I doing? What am I thinking? What am I doing? Like, I'm not standing in what I believe in. Basically, what I want to tell y'all is don't make the mistake that I made. Stand on what you believe in. And when you stand on that, be willing to die for that too. Sacrifice anything at all costs, because that means any means necessary. Because understand this, that I got a little sister. I got a little brother, 15 years old, alone in Athena, Oregon right now, living the life that I lived. So when we talk about the black community, we don't mean where the majority of black people live. We're also talking about me, my 15-year-old sister, my family that lives alone in Athena, Oregon. That's also a part of the black community, so I need you to continue to fight for them, stand for them, and don't forget about them. Y'all continue to fight. That's all I got.
Thank you guys all for sharing your stories. We really appreciate that. We're going to start wrapping up here soon, but the first thing I wanted to do real quick before we wrap up is I just want you guys to throw a fist up in the air for me. We came a long way. It's been a long day. I appreciate y'all. This is bigger than our fatigue. Can you say I can't breathe? Can you say I can't breathe?
I can't breathe.
Can you say I can't breathe?
I can't breathe.
Can you scream I can't breathe?
I can't breathe.
Thank you guys so much. We're gonna march back now.